What's up, everybody? Welcome back to In My Non-Expert Opinion. I'm your host, Chelsea Reif, and I'm also a podcast strategist who helps people launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. I recently launched a Substack called Slight Turbulence, so if you want to read my writing about my 10 years of globetrotting, head to the link in my show notes to read all about it. Now, that's a perfect segue into what I'm talking about today, coach versus influencer. How do you know which one you are or which one is the best for you, and can you be both? As someone who has experienced both channels, being a coach and being an influencer, I'm here to speak from personal experience, and I'm here to speak from experience of my expertise working in influencer and content marketing for 6 years. So if you don't know this, before I had my own consulting business, I actually worked as a salesperson for an influencer and content marketing software. So what this software did was house all these influencers, and when brands needed to work with influencers on campaigns, we had this software that could easily track down exactly who they were looking for. So they would say, hey, we're a snack brand in the Midwest, so we need moms with two kids, that one is a toddler and one is an infant, and they need to shop at Costco. Their household income is $40,000 to $60,000. They're married, so on and so forth. And we had all this data in our platform to be able to spit back out these influencer lists and be able to partner with these brands. So I was fortunate enough to work there for over 5 years. I think it was close to six, and work with some of the biggest brands in the world, including Dell, M&M's, Yahoo Sports. I worked on little campaigns all the way to massive campaigns. We worked on the Yahoo Sports March Madness campaign, and I worked with celebrity influencers, and I got to fly to New York and work with Dan Marino and all these NBA stars, and Richard Sherman was on the campaign, who's in the NFL, if you don't know. All these athletes I'm talking about, all these people are major, major NBA and NFL athletes. So I have a very unique lens because I worked in the influencer sphere just being able to observe as a marketing expert, and then I had all this knowledge to be able to try it out myself, which is what I did when I went solo on my own. So again, I'm speaking from my personal experience working as an influencer and being on the other side of it, like essentially selling influencers. Same thing with coaching. I've been a coach and I've also been coached, and I can observe and understand coaching and be able to speak to both of these sides and how they work. And again, the pros and cons and which one makes sense for you. So the reason I even wanted to do this episode is, as a podcast strategist myself, who also has been podcasting for 6 years, I constantly hear two different things from clients. The first is they want to start a podcast as a hobby or like creative outlet. So they're like, I just want to connect with people and share my stories and vibe out on certain conversations and pick people's brains. Like, this is just a fun hobby. The second type of person that comes to me is like, I really think I want to make podcasting my main marketing platform and be able to drive business through my podcast. So I usually help both people. That's what Mic Drop is. It can help anyone from a creative hobbyist all the way to someone who's a consultant and wants to use podcasting as a marketing channel. However, something happens when they start podcasting. They get really excited and they're like, oh my God, I love doing this. I love plugging in my mic. This is so fun. People are DMing me. And then either they lose the motivation because they realize how big of a production it is and they don't feel like it's worth the squeeze, so to speak. This happens a lot to hobbyists. So they're like, I don't really know what I'm doing every week. Like, this is a lot of work and I feel like I'm not getting a lot of traction. So I'm just going to stop doing it. The thing that happens with people that do it for money, so to speak, like people that want to drive revenue to their business, they start realizing, oh my gosh, this is also a big production and I'm not getting any sales, so I don't know what to do. And I think that's often because we don't understand if we're trying to be a coach versus an influencer and how to make our content work for us. So what I'm talking about today, I'm going to be really speaking not just to podcasting only, but creating content and how to know how you're creating content if you're in the coach bucket or influencer bucket. And again, can you be both? So why don't we start out with coaching, okay? Coaching, we can also interchange this for strategist, consultant, business coach, etc. The way coaches primarily make money is through business offerings or services. So consulting, digital products, courses, memberships, that's usually what falls under the umbrella of coaching and consulting. They also provide education, mentorship, or support. And essentially their job is to help other people, right? That's at the end of the day, what a coach is doing is helping people become either a better version of themselves, make more money, get more time back. It's helping someone through a transformation. Now, the pros of a coach, in my opinion, are you get to make your own rules. You get to create your own prices, schedule, contracts, etc. You are your own boss. So you get loads of freedom because you get to set up the infrastructure and ecosystem of how you want your business to look. I have been coaching now for about 3 years. I started as a mindset coach, and that was very heavy on manifestation and spirituality. Then I started slowly shifting into podcast coaching. And then I realized I love helping people launch podcasts and storytell and interview and pitch. Like, that's what my background is. So then I fully made the hard pivot into podcast coaching, but I realized I couldn't set podcast coaching up the same way that I had done mindset coaching. So mindset coaching, I had a course and I did a bunch of workshops and boot camps. And then I also had one-on-one clients. Now, the difference between what I was doing then versus podcast coaching was there wasn't a lot of custom strategy necessarily needed for the mindset stuff. So what I mean by that is it was really just listening, right? It was helping people understand, okay, here's where you're at, point A, you want to get to point B. How can we reverse engineer where you're at in life right now and help you take baby steps to get there? OG listeners know I'm a big fan of baby steps. I think it's so helpful in how you regulate your nervous system. And I think that's how you can start to make bigger changes is by doing it in phases and going really slow. So someone would come to me and be like, you know, I really want to work on my health. And so we just start with, okay, well, why don't we start making a habit tracker and start to try a morning routine and start incorporating more water, right? Like just slow baby steps. And then someone else would say, I feel like I'm struggling with self-worth or doubt. And so we'd start to do exercises of like reframing and affirmations, etc. As you start to listen to this, you can see that I was attracting people from all different backgrounds, right? Some people were anxious. Some people struggled with self-worth. Some people struggled with money. Some wanted business help. So it got a little too convoluted. And I realized this is why I need to pivot and pick one thing that I'm really good at that is my zone of genius and really double down on that, which is podcasting. So that's why I no longer do mindset coaching. Even though I think I was pretty good at it and I liked it, it just didn't make sense for the long-term vision of what I was trying to do. So when I started the podcast coaching, I realized I don't know that I can do all these boot camps and workshops all the time because everyone's podcast is so different. So I realized I need to be more customized. Everyone wants to do different podcasts. I would have someone who's a mom with 3 kids who wanted to do a bi-weekly podcast about parenting and spirituality, where then a millennial woman would come to me who lived in a big city and had a full-time job and no kids and wanted to do twice-weekly episodes that were stream of consciousness behind the scenes. So I realized, okay, well, doing a boot camp that is going to be a little more vague and gives people steps is okay. But if I want to do private coaching, then I really need to double down on customization. So the way I set up my business model was to have really high level, almost like premium consulting clients. And then I have my course Mic Drop, which helps people with the basics. So anybody that's a podcaster would have to go through these basics, right? Any podcaster has to plug in a microphone, plug in their headphones, record into a software, edit, upload it. There's no bypassing that. No matter what level of podcaster you are, you go through that process. So the customization of this allowed me to realize I can also customize my prices, my contracts, et cetera, my schedule, right? So it goes back to the whole thing of I got loads of freedom to choose the ecosystem that I wanted to create. I also think a pro of being a coach, strategist, et cetera, is you get to use your skill set that will help in the long run. You can keep improving and refining your skill set that will open up new revenue streams. So an example is when I started podcast coaching, I was really helping people with the launch piece. So I would say, here's what you need to do. We need a batch record. We need to plan your timeline. Here's exactly what you need to do for the launch. Then as time would go on, people would say, you know, I really want to interview and I want to start pitching myself on other podcasts. And I realized, well, not only was I in sales for 6 years, which is pitching, I used to have to pitch different stories back in the day when I was doing broadcast journalism stuff. And then with the influencer campaigns I was working on, we constantly had to pitch brands and ideas. Like, sales is pitching. So then I said, okay, let me try pitching and teaching that. And then it worked. And then people started to land their pitches. And I was like, okay, this is a skill set that I feel like I can help people with and keep refining. Then people would start interviewing people and say, the interview was kind of a flop. Like, I don't know what happened. The guest was rambling. I couldn't get the right questions out of them. They didn't really feel excited. They didn't even share the episode. And so I realized, well, once again, I have a background in this. Broadcast journalism, all I did in my senior year, and by the way, I went to grad school for this too, all I did was interviewing and reporting. I really wanted to be a sports reporter, and so all our assignments were interviewing athletes at the college and being able to package a story. We would have to put it up in front of the whole class and get it critiqued, and we did this on a weekly basis, so only had a week-long turnaround, which is why I think podcasting turned out quite well for me, because I understand what goes into producing a story and turning it around in a week. Now, I used that background and those skills to start teaching people about interviewing and hosting and essentially reporting. So then that became a sub-skill that I realized, oh, this is really cool. This is a new revenue stream. So my point here is that I can pivot whenever I want. Right now, I'm actually thinking of doubling down more on pitching and interviewing because I love that stuff. And I don't think people realize how many opportunities you leave on the table when you don't know how to interview and pitch people. I have landed insane guests that don't even do interviews just because of how I pitch and word things, right? If you go to my Instagram, it's a mess. Like, I don't have any curated feed. I don't have a strategy. I don't send out the most perfect newsletters in the world. Like, to be honest, my digital strategy is a bit chaotic, but I know how to position myself in pitches. So that's why I'm like, oh, I could pivot to pitching right now and have a full-on pitching consulting business where I help people pitch, or it's a done-for-you service, or I have a course just on pitching, et cetera. So this is the beauty, again, of being a strategist or consultant is as you put things out, you get to make iterations of it and start to feel out what you really love to do and then, again, double down on it. There's also really no limit to your revenue streams. So as a strategist, we could create a digital product like an ebook. We could create an on-demand course. We could have a membership. You could do paywalled content that's like private coaching just for these certain people, which probably would be a membership, to be honest. You could do consulting one-on-one. You could do small group coaching. You can do masterminds. And a lot of people run a lot of these things at once. I'm a reflector. I'm a traveler. I don't have the bandwidth or energy or capacity to be running like a membership and a mastermind and one-on-one. And again, this is why I love choosing to be a strategist, because I can pick what model works for me. So if you are listening to this and you're like, yeah, I want to create products that teach people specific skill sets, or I want to coach them through that or consult it through it, then yes, coaching, strategy, consulting, et cetera, might be your lane. There's cons, of course, because there's a downside to everything. I would say one of the biggest ones is figuring it out all alone, and it can be very daunting because you're constantly feeling like you need to invest in yourself. Raise your hand if you were in year one of business and you're like, okay, I'm ready to start. I know what I'm going to teach people. For me, that was at the time mindset. So I was like, okay, wait a second. I don't know how to put a course together. So I took a course on creating a course. While I was in that course, I realized I think I need help. I think I need support. So then I was like, I should probably take a course on like managing people or learning how to hire a VA. And so then I would just like ask people questions and join all these Facebook groups. I didn't spend money on that, but I remember being like, I should learn this skill. Then as I was going on and moving forward, I got really into spirituality and astrology and human design. So then I started investing into courses about reading my birth chart and reading my human design chart and considering a human design certification at the same time considering a birth chart reading certification so I could integrate that into my work. While I was doing this, I was also like, I should work on my money mindset because people are going to start paying me for this course. And I have this weird belief that people aren't going to pay the money for this value, and I need to work on that. Oh, so now I'm in a money membership and a money course, and I'm considering hiring this person one-on-one. And while I'm going through all this, there's ups and downs and chaos. I think I need a therapist and maybe a spiritual advisor that I do like check-ins or tarot card readings. So year one of my business, that's how my investment portfolio in terms of business investments looked like. It was chaotic. It was all over the place. It didn't make sense for the level I was at. The thing is, and I want to say this to anyone that's in like year one or two of business, I personally don't think you learn all of that at once. I don't think that in the same 6-month window, you're going to learn how to launch a course and create funnels and understand how your business model is going to look and understand customer service and be an accountant and understand taxes and understand how to retain clients and how to create an email nurture sequence and market. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about it out loud right now and it sounds funny, but That's how a lot of us operate. We're like, I need to get this done and it needs to be in 6 months. I don't know where these timelines came from, because if we go back to how any traditional school system works, you have years to craft your skill, right? In college, we get 4 years, which is silly that we're like 18 years old and we get 4 years to pick like one thing we want to work on. And most of us dick around and don't even really perfect that skill. We probably pass and move on and try to find a full-time job in that area. But my point is, we still give ourselves 3 or 4 years at the minimum too, right? So it's weird to me that all of a sudden with business, we're like, I have to figure all this out in 6 months. And I'm like, what are you talking about? A business is a business. Like, unless you went to business school, I don't understand how you would understand how to set up an online consulting or coaching business in 6 months. So I know this is a tangent and a little bit of a rant, but we need to give ourselves more grace. And that would be my advice, is if you're starting an online business, give yourself the same time you gave yourself in school. Give yourself 4 to 5 years. I mean, hell, I went to grad school for 2 years. So technically I had 6 years to work on my skills as someone in the media and communications industry, right? This is how I figured out, oh, wait, I think I like podcasting more than vlogging, or I actually like to speak more than I like to take pictures, right? This is how, because I had this timeline of 6 years to figure it out. Plus then I had the timeline of working in corporate America for another 5 or 6 years to figure out what worked. So all of a sudden, when I started my business during the pandemic, I was like, okay, but now it has to be done in 6 months. I have to get it. I have to be a millionaire in 6 months. I have to make six figures. I need to have the $5,000 a month. And then at 10,000, like, it was insane. And guess what? I burned out. I shut my business down for 3 months. I couldn't handle the influx of clients because I was putting so much pressure on myself to learn 12 new skills. And I feel like this is the con of being a consultant or coach, is you do feel like you need to fill every single gap and you have to do it all at once. And so you start hiring sometimes a little too fast. Now, there's going to be people listening to this that are like, oh, but if you don't take the risk, where are you going to be in 6 months? I remember my first coach said that. She was like, you know, if you don't invest today, where do you see yourself in 6 months? And I could obviously rationalize where she was going with that. Like, if I wait another 6 months, I'm going to be exactly where I am. I would have appreciated that and been a little more open to that statement had I not just told her, let me think about it, because this is a big investment. It will probably have to go on my credit card. I'm making absolutely $0 from my coaching business right now. Let me take a moment to breathe and like look at if this is worth it. If I hadn't just told her that, maybe that statement of where I would be in 6 months would make sense. However, to me, I felt like that was very predatory. She was letting me know that I could take out another credit card with a 0% APR for 18 months. I could use PayPal credit. We could maybe work out a different plan. You know, some people have pulled from their savings to make this happen. And I was just kind of like, this is giving very desperate energy. But at that time, I think she realized that there was a piece of me that was a bit desperate. I was working as a nanny in Australia, babysitting for accommodation. Like, I didn't have to pay rent. I was living off my tax savings refund. And Australia at the time gave us our money back from what they would consider like a 401k. And then we got those checks from the government in the United States. I forget what they're called, like the surplus checks. That's definitely not it. Stimulus checks. The stimulus check is what I was living off of. And I feel like she could sense that and was really preying on that. And this is the part of coaching and consulting that I don't appreciate. This message is like, if you want to get ahead faster, then you need to start being extremely risky with your investments. Go listen to the episode with Haley Lloyd where we talk about this. I think she did it the most genius way. She kept her full-time job at a tech company for a year and used her salary to essentially fund her business. So any paycheck she was making, she was like, okay, I'm going to obviously live off my bills and do what I need to do. But any extra money, that's when I'm going to start investing in consultants and courses and coaches, instead of jumping off the deep end and being like, woo, quit my job, no safety net. Let me invest in 5 new mentors and see what happens. I don't think that works. And unfortunately, that's a lot of the messaging you'll see on Instagram and online. I see this messaging most in the spirituality and business coaching sector, where there's a lot of urgency to make the transformation now. Like, you have to get it done now or you are not going to be living your best life. This constant messaging of like improving yourself and living your best life, I'm like, when does it stop? Are we ever going to be okay with not improving every day? I hear this from podcasters and bloggers and Instagram influencers all the time. Like, I'm just constantly trying to improve myself. And I'm like, do we get to stop improving at once? Like, is there a threshold where you're like, I've improved a lot. Like, I think I'm good here. I like where I'm at. That's my whole gripe with the downside of coaching, is that you really will feel like you're behind and you will constantly get messages like that, and it will feel very overwhelming. I think the other overwhelming piece of this type of business is that you don't know what to do first. So there's a lot of chicken or the egg situations, and it's not exactly clear on how you plan to move forward. Now, this is why a lot of business coaches started developing like launch your business programs or masterminds, because they realized, wait, people don't know the steps. And I do think there's great coaches out there that will be like, here's phase one, here's what you need to do. Here's phase two. I'm sure if you get on some discovery calls with people and search the internet, you will find your perfect person. For me, I think I knew that I had the business knowledge and background because I worked in corporate America for 6 years. And I went to grad school, and we had so many speakers come in and speak about their creative careers and how they made it take off and the collaborations they did, et cetera. So I didn't start my business when I was like 18 with no knowledge of how the world worked. I started my business when I was 28. And again, I had years of experience. So for me, this whole chicken or the egg thing started coming up when it came to business foundation specifically, where I was like, wait, do I need to file an LLC to be a legitimate business? Or do I actually need to like make clients first and then file an LLC? I don't really know. Okay, well, let's just move to the next thing. If I need clients, I need a website, right? But wait, if I need a website, I probably need a brand. And if I need a brand, I probably need brand identity and design. But wait, if I need that, I probably need someone to strategize with. And I feel like I'm running up against some resistance, and I feel like maybe I need to talk to a spiritual advisor first. So let me go get a tarot card reading, and then I can hire the brand designer, and then I'll hire the website designer. This is how, at least in my head, how it worked. And this is, again, the downside is it's like, which one do you do first? There's a lot of that. This happens with podcasting too. I get this question all the time. I don't have a course yet, and I don't have a coaching business yet. Should I start my podcast first or wait until I have clients and then start a podcast? My experience, because this is what worked for me and other people, was start your podcast first so you have this library of content for people to binge, so that when you launch your course, they're like, oh, this is a no-brainer. I'm signing up. Right? That's my personal opinion, because I have seen it work for me and I've seen it work for a lot of my clients. The same way that Instagram coaches will tell you, you need to be posting on Instagram and giving people value all the time before you sell your offer. That's kind of my mindset about podcasting. Now, there's business coaches that might tell you, no, you need to actually develop your offer first, develop an online presence, you know, give people a ton of free value on social media, and then you can start your podcast to go deeper. I personally don't agree with that, because again, I think long form content does better with building connections and driving conversions. It also does better for SEO. You can chop it up and turn it into a million assets. This is a podcast for another day. But this is what I'm saying, right? If you're listening to this and you were like, wait, that was my question, and now I'm a bit confused, this is how it feels a lot in business when you're starting out, especially, is like, I don't know, does the chicken or the egg come first? And I can only tell you there's not really an answer for this. I think you just have to do it and realize, as an entrepreneur, you're going to eat shit along the way. You are risky. That is the definition of an entrepreneur. Go Google it. It literally means someone who takes financial risks. So my risk tolerance is very high, because I know that I have a safety net of my parents. Meaning like I could go back home and live with them if I really needed to and save money. I know that I have high credit card limits on certain credit cards. I have savings. I know my skill set and how to generate revenue. So I am a little riskier than most people, but I have calmed down a little bit. I have realized maybe it's better to learn the gift of patience and waiting, just like a child doesn't get a toy just because they scream and beg for it. They wait until they start behaving again, and then their parents are like, okay, now we can go buy the toy. I've learned this skill. I don't overinvest. Like, I could actually feel myself recently feeling like this, where I'm like, wait, I want to hire a videographer and a social media manager and like a spiritual advisor and maybe like a research assistant. And I could feel that little fire burning in me that I felt when I was in year one of business, where I just was like, fuck it. And I just put everything on a credit card. This is how a lot of us feel when we're in the coaching and consulting business, is that we need to fill all the knowledge gaps. They need to be done now. I need to get ahead now. And it's time to pull the trigger. And then sometimes we look back and we're like, maybe I should have waited a little bit. I think another con is that you do need lots of support to fill in the spots that you're not good at. So whether that's a contractor, a team member, a freelancer, a one-off consultant, etc., you realize not only am I not skilled at everything, I either don't like doing everything, or energetically, this is so taxing, or I straight up like do not know, right? Now, this is the part, I talked about this last year on my Honest Year in Business review, that I don't think people get as much as I would want them to. And so I want to drill this point home right now. I think a lot of you should be investing way more into done-for-you services versus learning how to do it. I don't think it's a bad idea to learn how to do things, right? I hate back-end stuff. I literally hate creating funnels and automations and testing all the links and making sure they work and does the checkout page lead to the success. I fucking hate it, okay? That doesn't mean I don't know how to do it. I know how to do it, and that's how I figured out I hated it, because I had done it so many times that I realized I think I could outsource this to someone that loves doing it, is skilled at it, and that it will create this huge, huge relief for me that I don't have to go in and look at all the little steps. Now, my old VA, she loved that. She literally said to me in her application email, "I know this is weird, but I'm obsessed with systems and automations. Like, it tickles my brain to create that stuff." And I was like, what planet am I living on that people like doing this? And I realized that's the same thing of how people probably think about what I do in podcasting, right? There's probably people that are like, I would never do that. And here I am doing it, making it my career. There are people that will do things for you that you do not need to do. Okay. So when I'm talking about like a one-time project, this could be setting up your contract automations or like your intake and onboarding process. You can just pay for that once and be done with it. But a lot of people don't realize this. And so they'll go take a course on how to onboard someone and how to set up whatever, Dubsado or Honeybook or whatever all these platforms are. And then they'll be like, oh, wait, now I need to learn about onboarding. So let me go take a course about onboarding. When in reality, this is my perspective, again, my non-expert opinion, maybe kind of expert because I've been in business now for 3 years, is like you can just hire someone one time and do that for you and be done with it. Set it up one and done, and you don't have to worry about it again. This is what my old VA did when I started really getting a huge influx of one-on-one clients. And she set up an onboarding software and like automation for me. And then we never thought about it again. It was like, boom, they apply, they get the link. If we sign with them, they get the contract, so on and so forth. That saved my life. And I think that was why I was able to start increasing my revenue, because I had that block moved out of my way, right? It was like a pebble in the shoe where you're just like, oh, this is annoying. It's not that big of a pebble. I could just stop on the walk and take it out, but I'm going to keep walking until it really starts to annoy me. And then at one point you're like, yeah, this is annoying. I have to take the pebble out of my shoe. So as a consultant or coach, understanding what you don't like doing and that you're bad at or is draining your energy, that's a really good skill to have, so you can look for teams or, again, contractors to support you. But I think it goes back to that mentality of feeling like you have to do it all at once. It can feel very overwhelming where you're like, wait, I do need a VA. And I do need a podcast editor, and I do need a video editor, and I do need someone to make social media graphics because I don't know how to do all that. And to me, that's one of the downsides, is you constantly feel like you're kind of behind with your support and where it's at. Another con for me personally is it can feel very competitive with the income claiming. Okay, I know this is going to open up a little can of worms. I don't even think it's that spicy, to be honest. Like, I kind of hate when people are like, unpopular opinion, and it's not even unpopular. It's like very basic, like everyone probably agrees with you. So I don't know if I'm being that way right now, but I personally don't like the income claim marketing, not because I don't think it's inspiring, but I don't think it does a good job of showing what the coach or consultant does. So here's what I mean. A business coach will launch their new program of how to launch a business, right? So they'll say, if you're in business, you should take this course. It's 6 months. It's going to teach you everything you need to know about launching a business. So obviously, people that don't know how to run a business will be like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I need. But what happens is that coach will start to market their income and say, woo, student A signed up. That's another 5K day. Boom, student B, congrats, you're in. $10,000 today. Student C, yes, $15,000. Let's go. Doors are closing. 2 spots left. And then you start seeing that coach and you're like, oh my God, she just made $15,000. That's so exciting because we love money and it looks like she made it really quickly. I want to learn how to do that. So you start to speed up your decision-making process all based on the idea of you are also going to be at that level and make money really fast. And then you tend to invest because of the income claim versus the skill set. What I would rather know if I was going to invest $5,000 in a business coach is, what skills are you teaching me? Are you teaching me how to onboard clients? Are you teaching me how to retain clients? Are you teaching me how to set up a course? What system should I use? Should I drip my content out or give it to them all at once? Should this be self-paced or should I look at the live elements like a Slack community and a coaching call? Are you going to teach me about what if people push back in the middle of a program and they want to cancel? Are you going to teach me about students that actually aren't a fit by the time they get through the course or halfway through and I realize this person is really not suited for it? How, you know, what are you going to teach me? Now, this is where I think business coaches and consultants should really do a better job of marketing what they can help you with. Because I remember thinking when I invested in my coach, oh, she's going to help me with everything. Like, I'm literally going to learn every little thing about business from her. And in reality, some people are better at launching only, and they should be like launch strategists or business coaches. Or some people are better at marketing. I will say this. I think most business coaches are marketing coaches. They're really good at marketing. They understand content. They understand content pillars and how to create a strategy and market themselves. And in my opinion, it would serve them better to market themselves as marketing coaches versus business coaches. So this is my hang up sometimes with the income claim marketing, because it doesn't show you the skills that you're going to learn. And if you're a new business owner, your first thought is, I need to make money. Right? Like, that's the point of a business, is I need to be able to make money and help people. So if someone is telling you, well, here, I just made $15,000 in a day, and you're going to go invest in them, you're probably thinking, this is really cool. I could probably make $15,000 in a day too, without understanding, oh, wait, I'm just going to learn like Instagram marketing. I'm not actually going to learn how to onboard clients and retain them and upsell them, or I'm not going to learn how to create like a custom plan for them. Again, this is why you need to do more digging. I talked about this a lot last year in the Honest Year in Business Review episodes, but you really need to be more discerning and ask better questions on the discovery calls. And if you're getting any red flag feeling, that's okay. That's your signal to be like, you know what? Maybe this just isn't the program for me. Or maybe I just need to invest in one skill set. Maybe I don't need a full-on business coach to teach me every little thing. At this point in time, I really just need someone to help me with like onboarding documents and contracts. So now I'm going to look at a contract template or a lawyer or something like that. I think the income claiming also creates a lot of competitiveness, because you constantly think it's not good enough, right? It used to be 5K months were a big deal. Then 10K months were the gold standard. Now it's like 50K months and 100K months. And it's just like never enough. And you start to feel shitty. Even though most of us, when we consider ourselves to be successful, is when we either A, surpass our corporate salary, B, can pay all our bills and have a little bit left over, or C, can do all the above and be generous and, you know, give money away. That's what we consider success. And that might look different for you, right? If you live in Bali and you're making $5,000, you would be bawling out. Like, you could live in a luxury villa with a pool for $1,000, hire a team for like $1,000, $2,000, and then still have $2,000 left over to do whatever you want with. $5,000 in New York City might not get you that far, because your rent would be $3,500. And then just going out to eat or anything would be $1,000. That leaves you like $1,000 for investing in your business. So this is why I don't like the income claiming either, because there's just no context into how far that income is taking them. There's no context into anything, really. There's no context into the taxes, what they saved, what they put towards debt. Like, it's so funny. So I'm living in a co-living right now. And obviously, we all kind of live on top of each other and get to know each other. And whenever I'm cooking, I always listen to the I Will Teach You to Be Rich podcast by Ramit Sethi. It is so helpful, by the way. I really love his podcast. And I'm sitting there and someone made a comment to me like, oh, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Aren't you rich? And they made that comment because I had said or done something that insinuated like I'm not struggling, right? I'm not broke. And I was like, I mean, yeah, I make good money, but I also have student loans. I went to grad school privately in Loyola. That student loan was like $60,000. I have credit card debt because again, going back to risk, I've taken a lot of risky investments and been like, well, let me just put on a credit card and pay it off later. Don't always recommend that, by the way. But yeah, I was like, well, you know, I have this, that, and the other thing. And he's like, oh, I didn't know that. I thought you were rich. And I'm like, wow, this to me is like the same energy of the business income claiming thing of like someone could have a $50,000 month, but be spending $40,000 on their business just to keep it running from like team members and software and consultants, and then have like $5,000 of living expenses and $5,000 left over to pay debt, but they're actually in like $100,000 of credit card debt. So to me, it doesn't really matter how much money you make. It's like, what is your net worth? And obviously that's not how people promote themselves in the business coaching industry or online. I'm talking about business specifically because this is where I see it the most, but it can feel extremely competitive because you're like, well, $5,000 isn't enough. I need $10,000. $10,000 is not enough. And I need $20,000. And you're just like, okay, well, I feel like I'm constantly behind and this isn't fun anymore because I'm just feeling like I'm chasing my money, that I'm just chasing money and treating every client like a dollar sign. And it's lost its spark a little bit. I've been in that stage of my business where I will admit like money got the best of me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to sign up as many people as possible in the program without considering the energy of the program. Like maybe I actually don't need 20 people inside this container. It probably would make sense to have like 5. And maybe I can do cohorts so that I could still make the same amount of money, but not have all that energy in one group. So again, I think this is something we can all relate to if we are a consultant or coaches. We start to feel competitive or jealous, right? That's really what it is too, is jealous or behind. And I don't think that's helpful. The last con in this specific coaching versus consulting sector is while there's no cap on your income, which is amazing, your sales cycles could be way longer depending on the structure of your business and what you're selling. So for example, if I'm selling a $50 ebook, I would have to sell a lot of those to make up for the income I was making in corporate America, or even, you know, pay my bills, right? Even if my rent was $500, I would have to sell so many, what is that, 100 of those ebooks. And 100 is a lot if you're just starting out. If you don't have a platform and you're just starting from scratch and you have like a few hundred followers on Instagram and 20 people on your email list and maybe a few hundred on TikTok, it's really hard, in my opinion, to sell 100 of something, even if it's $50. So you might have to look at your sales cycle and structure and be like, okay, maybe the ebooks shouldn't come first. Maybe I need to focus on a higher ticket item, like doing a one-on-one call or a mini mastermind or a consulting project that will pay me upfront, you know, $3,000, whatever it is, right? You constantly have to reiterate your structure, which is kind of annoying. But once you get it, you get it. And you're like, okay, this works. It feels like a well-oiled machine. I could just keep doing this and create this flywheel that's constantly bringing in clients where I understand what I have to sell, what I have to market, and when there's going to be maybe some downturns. Your sales cycle will also depend on the pricing of things, right? I actually find it much easier to sell high ticket because you only need a few people, whereas lower ticket stuff, you need more people to make up for the income goal. It goes back to the ebook example, right? If I want to make $5,000 on a $50 ebook, I'm going to have to sell way more of those versus if I just signed one client that would pay me $5,000. So this could be a downside because you're constantly tweaking and iterating and you're putting out projects that you really, really love. And then you're like, why is no one buying this? Like, I put so much effort into this. I hired a brand designer to make the ebook. It's beautiful. It's so helpful. Like, I don't understand why I can't sell more than 5 of these. And that can feel so frustrating. And you can start to throw in the towel early. I've done that. Like, I've literally been like, this isn't good. By the way, though, this is when I was doing launches like a crazy person. I would have an idea on a Wednesday and by like Friday, I'd be marketing it and the start date would be the following Monday. Like I was a crazy person and I would do that so much and be like, wow, this sucks. I need to stop creating this and I'm like a bad business owner, when in reality, I just wasn't taking the time to plan. Sometimes taking time to plan means you're not generating the revenue that you want, which goes back to why I think you really need to build financial stability for yourself before you start selling so that you don't feel like a failure or that you're going to be, you know, out on the streets if you don't sell out your ebook. You need that financial cushion to help you. So now we've gone through the pros and cons. I wanted to mention a few people that I feel like fall in this category. Now, a reminder that if you are a coach, consultant, strategist, etc., the way you make money are from services and offerings, which are usually consulting, coaching, digital products, education, mentorship, or support. I feel like Lexi Merritt from Pretty Decent, she's been on this podcast. She's a perfect example of a strategist. She specializes in launching. She's incredible at writing nurture sequences and sales pages and understanding a launch. So to me, Lexi is someone who perfectly embodies being a strategist or a consultant because she's not making money any other way than helping you with the skill set and taking you from point A to B with her skill set. I also think Victoria Washington would fall under this bucket. She runs the House of Wealth Embodiment. She also just started a podcast. So wink, wink, I think you should pay attention to that. Look at what all successful people are doing. Most of them have a podcast. Just quick plug for podcasting once again. But she does an incredible job of selling her courses, her memberships, her consulting services, etc. From my knowledge, she doesn't make money the way an influencer would, which is usually brand sponsorships or partnerships. So we'll get to that in a second, but I think she's a really good example. And then I would say myself, I fall under this category too, as I'm a strategist for podcasters. So should you pursue this route? I would say pursue it if you have a specific skill set to teach. You love supporting people in their expansion, you love educating and teaching people, and you enjoy creating your own schedule and having more control of your time and your content. So you are the creative director, you create the prices, you create the timelines, you create the calendar. Everything is under your control usually, and I feel like you should pursue this if you check majority of those boxes. We're going to cut the episode right there because it's actually so long that I decided to split it into two parts. So stay tuned for next week where we'll dive deep into the influencer side of things. For now, let me know what you think in the Spotify polls, which you'll see on Spotify. Go to the episode and scroll down and you'll see there's different polls and questions you can engage with. Tag me in your Instagram stories or DM me at Chelsea Reif. And just a reminder, this month, anyone who leaves a review, you're going to be entered into a giveaway to win the Pitching Yourself as a Guest Mastermind. Almost every time I've appeared on someone else's podcast as a guest, I've gotten either new email subscribers, new Instagram follows, or best of all, new sales. This just happened last week. Literally, someone bought my course, paid in full, and paid for an upgrade right after they heard me on a podcast. So if you're like, I want to try something new, tell my story, and just try a format where it's fun to have a conversation and speak to someone without all the pressure of an algorithm, then being a guest on other people's podcasts or platforms is probably your best next step. So again, you can win this class completely free if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts. So find my show, scroll down to the part where it says write a review, write your review, screenshot, and then send it to info@chelseareif.com or at Chelsea Reif on Instagram. And just a reminder, this class is up for sale on my site right now, along with a ton of other specialized classes from interviewing, monetizing, pitching. You'll find it all at chelseareif.com. All right, thanks so much for listening and stay tuned for next week, part two. I'm Chelsea Reif. This is In My Non-Expert Opinion, and I'll see you next week.